Session number 947.
Lord Thomas of Ramenham, Reel 1. Lord Thomas, have you always been mechanically minded?
Well, I was when I was a boy at Bromsgrove School. Engineering attracted me, and in the holidays I used to go to a factory at Wrexham, North Wales, and spend time messing about with the machines and files. And yes, I have always been attracted to engineering.
Why then did you join the army in 1915?
Well, at school at Bromsgrove, I'd been in the officers' training corps, and in 1914-15, it seemed to be the right thing to do to join the army, and the easiest way of doing it was to become a private in an armoured car division, or battery, as they call them in those days. And that's how I got into armoured cars.
How had you heard of armoured cars at that stage?
Well, there was a certain noble duke, I forget his name, who had some exploits in Belgium, I think it was, with Rolls-Royce armoured cars. And the romance of these things rather attracted me, added to which, to be perfectly frank, I'd come to the conclusion that I'd prefer to do my fighting sitting down rather than walking about. And if I was going to do it sitting down, I might as well have a piece of armour between me and the potential enemy. So it was a simple but logical line of thought.
Had you sort of seen exploits of armoured cars in newspapers and things?
I'd read about them. They were dashing about on roads, of course, somewhere, I think it was in Belgium or northern France. And the idea attracted me. And so I'd had some experience of mechanized machine guns, because a man called Geoffrey Smith, who was editor of the Motorcycle, I think it was, or one of those motoring papers, had formed a volunteer corps in the Midlands called the Midland Motor Volunteers, actually. We were on bicycles, and we used to spend weekends in the meadows near the Severn, constructing rafts out of petrol drums and getting motorcycles across streams and becoming becoming mobile in all directions and not tied to the roads, because it was becoming very apparent that vehicles that were constrained only to run on roads couldn't really get into a proper fighting unit, and the desirability of having a cross-country capability began to emerge at quite an early stage.
Did he help you actually practically to get into the machine gun corps?
Yes, he did. He had very strong links with the Motor Machine Gun Corps, which was stationed at Bisley. But to get into that, one had to, first of all, join the ASC, Army Service Corps then. They looked after cars, trucks, vehicles, and that sort of thing. And one had to pass a driving test. I found that passing the driving test was helped enormously by presenting the testing corporal with a packet of 20 gold-flake cigarettes, so that one had a commercial instinct as well as a military instinct in those days.
Was that mainly the only test they'd asked you about? Was there any other things they said, well, you've got to have?
Oh, I think there was some simple form of medical test. How did I feel? Well, and that sort of thing. There was nothing sophisticated about it at all.
How was Bisley organised in those days? How big was it as an establishment?
Bisley? Oh, I can't tell you how many people were there, but the ranges, of course, were used for the machine gun firing practice. The roads around Bisley were suitable for teaching people to drive better. And of course, it wasn't very far from the cross-country ranges near Farnborough, Aldershot, and that sort of thing. And so it was an ideal location for the getting together squadrons of armoured cars and motor machine guns. The motor machine guns were most curious vehicles. They consisted of motorcycles, either Scots, two strokes, or Clinos, which were bigger four stroke things, with a skeleton sidecar attached. The sidecar was a framework on which a Vickers 303 machine gun was mounted, and there was a so-called seat for the gunner to sit on. And the whole idea was to get extreme mobility for the machine gun. But here again, you see, they were constricted to good roads and compared to good surfaces. They got no cross-country capability at all. And they were useful for getting things from place to place. And, of course, the crew of two, the driver of the motorcycle and the gunner on the sidecar framework, when they were anywhere near action, they abandoned their mechanized transport, lifted the machine gun on its tripod, and ran to some vantage point from which they could fire it off at the enemy and not get hit themselves. And then if they wanted to retreat or advance, well hopefully, they went back to the machine gun and motorcycle, got on it and pushed off. All very exciting. It captured the imagination of a youngish boy, sort of thing. But I hung grimly onto my own idea of driving an armoured car. I passed not only the basic ASC test, but I also passed the test for driving a Rolls-Royce, which I think was probably a turning point in my lifestyle.
When you first went there, were you trained, as you've just described, on this motorcycle, and then you went out training like that, did you, motorcycle?
Well, one got a passing knowledge of the motorcycle, mainly because it was interesting. And had it so happened that there were no armoured cars available, one would have gone into the motorcycle machine gun corps. But happily, some Rolls-Royce armoured cars did become available. And so two batteries were formed called the Light Armoured Motor Battery, 4th and 5th. I was in the 4th. And, of course, Light Armoured Motor Battery is spelled LAMS. And we were sent out with our soft vehicles, Napier lorries and Model T Fords, yes, by ship from Avonmouth to Dar es Salaam. What's the name of the place? Mombasa, that's right. Calling in at Durban on the way. And we didn't see our actual armoured cars, the four of them, until we went up country from Mombasa to a place called Voi, where they were sent by train and unshipped. And it was there that we had the galling experience of finding that we couldn't turn the engines over because due to the long sea voyage, the oil had gummed up and it was absolutely impossible to turn the engines round. So we had to construct a ramp down which the vehicles ran under their own power. And then when they'd gathered, five, 7 miles an hour, let in the clutch in top gear with a shudder and a jar, but that was more powerful than the starting handle operation. And happily, the engines, all four of them, they fired, and the oil thinned out, and there we were mobile, but it heartily cheered.
So, if I may return briefly to Bisley, you didn't actually work at Bisley on any armoured cars at all?
No, because there were none there. To use the parlance of the next war, they were in very short supply.
You mentioned that you'd done an ASC basic test. What was that on? What machines were you doing
that? Oh, that was a lorry, an old Thornycroft lorry or something like that. It was just a... it was to show that you could steer the thing and you could change gear and you could... the most difficult part of that test was reversing into a position. And you had to... sort of lean over the side a long way in the lorry, that sort of. And reversing is, well, to me anyway, it always has been and still is much more difficult than driving forward, because one tends to oversteer all the time.
And you did a test on the Rolls Royce at Bisley?
No, I never. The test was actually on some Napier cars, which were alleged to be more difficult to drive than Rolls-Royce. But if you passed your test on these Napier six-cylinder vehicles, you were judged good enough to drive Rolls-Royce. So that was that.
How many of you were involved in doing this sort of work there?
In the battery? Oh, or at Bisley, do you mean?
At
Bisley.
Yes.
Oh, in our particular squad, I suppose, there were about 30 to 35 people or something like that, which included drivers, gunners, and mechanics, and, of course, the drivers of the soft vehicles.
Were they all people with mechanical experience?
Yes, they had all had a mechanical bent. There were a lot of, or quite a number of them, as I remember it, had been chauffeurs. I know one was a chauffeur to Alfred Herbert, the machine tool manufacturer, the late Alfred Herbert, that is. And, they were either garage proprietors or certainly people with what is known as a motoring bent, anyway.
Well, who was doing the training? What kind of people were doing the training?
Oh, Army Service Corps officers. And they too were mainly from the motor trade, the garages, and a few from the factories. We had two fellows from the Rolls Royce factory itself in Derby, and they were corporals in the battery, and they came out to East Africa with us and were very useful in the whole campaign.
Did you do at Bisley the sort of regular drills and things, the basic training first?
Oh yes, we did PT, physical training, and got up at ungodly hours in the morning and ran around in sweaters and shorts and got ourselves disgustingly fit and all that kind of thing. Yes, we had a good army training as well as development of our mechanical ability. For instance, it was known that we were going out into the blue, into the felt, where there was no mechanical maintenance facilities. So we all had to learn to use files and spanners, pliers, all the instruments, the tools of a mechanic. And one of the tests was we had to file a block of iron into a cube of specific dimensions and of proper squareness. And that, too, gave us a sense of engineering. So I think we were at Bisley for about 4 months altogether. And what were the physical training, the drilling, the marching, what you call it, parade ground stuff, and the mechanical training, we were kept pretty busy, and it was very good for young chaps like us, because it gave us an appreciation that life was serious, and you had to be a good technician to serve your country. Because we were all volunteers, we appreciated that time, before Kitchener's army came in. And there was a very good spirit, I thought, when we were not conscripts, and we all wanted to do our best and enjoyed it.
Did you do any other type of training, like tactical training in some way? Did it go through how you would handle an armoured car or a motorcycle in action?
Yes, we did. There was a strong naval element in the armoured car set up, mainly because this Duke that I was talking about, with his armoured cars in Belgium, was RNAS, Royal Naval Air Service. Why, I don't know. But the idea of an armoured car being used as a ship was a strong element in our tactical training. Because these armoured cars had revolving turrets. They went round 360 degrees. And I think the idea of having a machine gun in a turret that revolved gave it a similarity to a battleship, which also had guns in turrets that revolved. And so we did get some tactical training, on the assumption, of course, that we were going out to a country where there was no set roads, and that hopefully the armoured cars would be able to operate over the felt and have a sort of naval flavour to their operations. I'll tell you more about that later.
So in other words, the training, how quickly had you learnt when you were at Bisley that you were off to East Africa? Was that generally known quite a way ahead, was it?
Well, we didn't know it was East Africa. We knew it was somewhere overseas, and it was not France, because by that time the war in France had got bogged down into trench warfare, and there was no scope for vehicles that would only run on roads and hadn't got a cross-country capability. So there we were. We knew we were going out to somewhere out east, but of course security in those days was very tight, and until we actually landed at Durban, we didn't know we were going to Africa.
What about gunnery? One final question. The gunnery training you did.
Oh, we all had what was supposed to be very sophisticated training in the Lewis, not the Lewis, the Vickers. 303 machine gun, where you had to be able to strip it down and reassemble it and get all the springs in the right places and fire it and that sort of thing. And you also were taught how to correct false image if you had a thick rim cartridge jammed. I think it was called in those days a number 3 stoppage or something. You had to hit the cocking lever with the palm of your, or the edge of your hand, a sort of karate blow, and that got the thing going again.
Would you say that by the time you left Bisley then, there had been some sort of elite spirit built up amongst you? Were you aware of that sort of...
Oh, yes. We were pretty proud of ourselves, to be perfectly frank. I mean, elitism is a good thing. It encourages people to be brave because they're afraid of being thought cowards. And it has that kind of built-up. So we were very proud. We used to go to Woking, which is near Bisley, for time off. It was a matter of pride that anybody wearing a MMG, middle machine gun badge, was supposed to behave himself and comport himself. In fact, surprisingly, the number of us who saved up our pocket money and had uniforms tailored in Woking, because they looked so much better than the issue khaki of the day. Some people call it swank, but I prefer the term elitism.
How many of you were actually sent out to East Africa? You mentioned two companies. How many did that, in fact, make it?
Oh, it's a long time ago, but I would guess at this range that there were about 60 officers, NCO and men, in the two armored, light armored batteries, the 4th and 5th. Because once we got to East Africa, our ways parted, because we went on one route and the 5th AMB went on another. So we didn't see much of each other. And then, of course, when we got there, we found that a fellow called Sir John Willoughby, who had something to do with the Willoughby raid in South Africa years before,
he'd also got a battery of armored cars, but they were pretty well static forts because they were lorry chassis with solid tires, and they weren't very much good, in our rather biased opinion, anyhow.
You mentioned that when you landed at Mombasa, you had this problem of the armoured cars, getting them started.
Yeah.
How long were you stationed at Mombasa in sort of basic training in the armoured car, using it? Things?
Oh, as soon as we got the cars, we began to move up country, up towards where the fighting was supposed to be going on. We went from... We actually didn't get the cars in Mombasa. We got the cars at a place called Voi, V-O-I, which is a junction on the railway between Mombasa and Nairobi. And then from Voi, we moved on to a place called Mbuni, which is towards the foothills of Kilimanjaro. And... to begin with, we were very happy because the felt was pretty flat, it was sandy and it was solid, and we could deploy the armoured cars into a sort of naval formation, like a lot of destroyers and so on. And this was all right. I mean, this was going to be war in East Africa. Well, it was all right at that stage. But as soon as we got near a place called Arusha, which is in the foothills of Kilimanjaro, the rains came, and of course that completely altered the story, because what had been glorious, flat, hard desert became soggy, black cotton mud. And of course these Rolls-Royce armored cars, it was fine on flat, hard roads, but their wheel loading was absolutely ludicrous. They had pretty well solid tyres, at least they were pneumatic, would-be pneumatic tyres filled with some stuff called rubberine to make them bulletproof. And, of course, this meant that they got no squashability, so to speak, so as soon as they hit a piece of soft ground, they sank into it, and there we were. It made things very difficult indeed. And our gallant idea of charging across the felt in the armored cars quickly changed, and we found ourselves ignominiously being towed by spans of oxen, which didn't seem right at all.
Did you When you got the armour car, did anybody train you how to drive them and how to use them and things?
No, we were supposed to have been through that kind of training at Bisley, and we were supposed to have a background of ability to drive and handle the vehicles. So there was no training done sort of on site. We were pushed into what was supposed to be active service as soon as we got to Africa.
Well, how were you divided into crews and things? How did that go about?
Oh, well, each car had its complement. It was the driver, the gunner, and I think it was the loader, yes, that's right. And then the rest of the chaps were on the soft vehicles, the looking after the kitchen equipment and the cooking and the tentage and all that kind of thing.
What were you when you first started? Were you a driver?
I was a driver of a soft vehicle, a Napier 30 hundredweight lorry, which was absolutely laden to the gunnels with 303 ammunition. It could barely get out of its own way, even on a hard road. And of course, when we struck the soft going, it was a very difficult vehicle. It really had to be towed most of the time, because the officers in charge of the armoured battery, quite naturally, I suppose, took aboard as much ammunition as they possibly could, and that overweighted the vehicles and made them very less mobile than they should have been. And then I was regarded as a substitute driver for an armored car. So one of the chaps went sick. I was...